Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Challenge and disappointment, challenge and success, loss and recovery, and then loss upon loss. But in any event, survival and more strength from the survival. Those are the larger arcs of 21 stories told in a new collection edited by Women on Fire founder Debbie Phillips. Debbie is a pioneer in the field of executive and life coaching, a field she pursued after a career in politics and public affairs, at one point as press secretary for Ohio Governor Richard Celeste in the 80s. She joins us again today, and coming up, we'll hear from two of the local contributors to her new book, Franklin County Commissioner Marilyn Brown and Mary Kay Purdy. But first, welcome to the show, Debbie Phillips.
Hi, Ann Fisher. So wonderful to be back home with you and in Columbus.
You are in Columbus. Of course, this is where one of your home, you sort of part of your life was spent in Columbus. Right. But you came back, you're having another Women on Fire tea that's sold out now.
Right.
And you're also doing a Women on Fire OSU day.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, the young women at Ohio State who had attended some of our Women on Fire events wanted to bring Women on Fire to Ohio State. And they thought it would be a great idea for young women who are juniors and seniors to be able to feel the inspiration, strategies, and support and the wisdom of older women as they launch themselves into the world. I thought it was a great idea, and they organized it, so we're doing that on Wednesday.
So you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and again, I'm talking with Debbie Phillips, the founder of Women on Fire. Debbie has joined us before. If you have a question or comment for her, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. A new book. This is your second book, your second collection.
Right.
Compare and contrast for me.
Well, 4 years ago, we put together the first Women on Fire book, and it was about stories that were struggles for women. And when women go through struggles, it often feels like they're alone. So if you're getting divorced, it feels like you're the only person getting divorced. If you have a child with a mental illness, it feels like you're the only one. So as a life and executive coach years ago, I saw this struggle in women. I certainly experienced it myself and decided to put together a compilation of stories. That was Women on Fire Book 1. I'm so thrilled, it actually won the Indie Excellence Award for the best compilation book in the country. And I can say that because I'm just so incredibly proud of these women who, most of these women had never shared their secrets and their stories about their lives. And because that was so popular, I decided I wanted to do it again and create a series. And so in comparing and contrasting, I would say it's just more of the richness of women sharing what they struggle with, what their battles were, what they wrestle with, and what they've succeeded. Because there's nothing more inspiring than hearing a story of something that you're going through, but you see the woman or the person has gotten through to the other side, and you just want to know, how did they do it? And so these stories explain that.
How do you find the storytellers for your books?
The way that I do it now, because the first time around, I actually selected the people. This time around, I actually put a call out. We received many, many more applications. There were also three or four authors that I knew I wanted to be in the book. So as I'm out and about in the country talking to women, I hear their stories and I go, oh, I know I want that woman's story in the book. So that's how we do it. And we have so much interest in women sharing their stories that I think as soon as I can catch my breath, book three will be coming.
You travel all over the country now for your Women on Fire teas and other events?
I do. We're primarily in a lot. I mean, we're on the West Coast. We're in Chicago. We're in Florida. We're in New York City. We're in Michigan. We obviously have an amazing group of Women on Fire in Columbus. I live on Martha's Vineyard, so we have, you know, women in the Boston area. So we have pockets, but we have women all over.
So once somebody's gone to a Women on Fire event, it doesn't go away for them. They're part of a group.
Right. Well, so I lived in Columbus, and I was young in my experience. When I worked for Governor Celeste, I was young. When I actually worked for John Glenn in the presidential campaign in 1984, I was 28 years old. And I always felt like I'm young in my experience. I need more support. So I wanted to create something for women that they could drop in and out of whenever they needed that dose of inspiration or comfort or support. And honestly, it's really the support they need. The wisdom is wonderful, but it's just that support of other women cheering you on in whatever it is you want to do. So yes, you can go to a Women on Fire tea. We have a membership program where I interview a phenomenal woman every month. So last month I interviewed Judy Blume, the author. Uh-huh. And I make it so that it's like a girlfriend. I tell them, kind of like what you do, Anne, you know, we're just sitting here chatting with each other, but share your heart and soul with our Women on Fire. So there's a membership program and women can belong to that. There's all kinds of events that we do that women can just pop in and out just so they get the little dose of love and support.
And there's a Facebook page and a website. And all of that kind of stuff. We'll have links to the website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you want to check that out. You know that everyone has a story.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's all about. Yep. Ultimately, everyone has that story of survival. That's why they're sitting there in the first place in some way or some size or shape. Yeah. They're a survivor of something, and they're there. So what does set apart these stories? Do you think they're just more variety, more variation on the theme, and it's just different kinds of stories?
I think what sets these apart is the authenticity of the stories, is women talk about their real life struggles. And I think in general, we don't do that. You know, we go about the day and we all just get through it, but we don't talk about the fact that, you know, and I can say, you know, my brother died last week. That actually is true. And, but, you know, I'm out in the world and I'm talking and going about things. But in these stories, we write about what happens when her brother dies, or what happens when I gave a child up for adoption, what went on in that unwed mother's homes, as they were called back then. And so there's an enormous amount of gratitude I find from the readers. That was the thing I think surprised me about Women on Fire Book One. There was so much gratitude where women, I had a young woman, there was a story about a woman delved into her eating disorder in a very powerful way. And I had a woman who actually is an actress come up to me. I knew she had read the book. I had given it to her. And she came up and she was very tall and she leaned over, put her head on top of my head and she cried and she pointed, she had the book in hand and she pointed to the chapter and she, you know, barely whispered, "That's me. Thank you." And she cried. And I just had that over and over. And so when we tell real life things and how we got through them, that's where the power is.
I'm very sorry about the loss of your brother.
Oh, thank you.
It was, of course, it's a sad time. And it was also really wonderful to read what people were saying to you, too.
Oh, it's amazing. It was amazing. I chose. In fact, I said to my husband, I said, you know, I think I'm just going to put his picture up and just say, I know you all understand that I just can't write this week. And my husband, who's just amazing, said, you know what? Okay, you could do that, but why don't you just go try? Why don't you just, I think it would be really a wonderful thing to do for women if you would just try. And so I sat down and for 2 hours I wrote where I really was in that moment. And I'm so grateful I did it. I got so much feedback that, you know, really has sustained me in getting through these, you know, last 10, 12 days.
Which is another aspect of what the women who contribute to the book get to go through as well.
Right.
It may not be something they've actually sat down and written about. Like Marilyn Brown's going to be on in a few minutes, and I've been reading about her daughter, mm-hmm. Darren, on Facebook and following it for quite a while now, years. But she must have gotten something out of that by actually writing it down, and we'll talk about her in just a minute. But has that been the case? Have there been any extraordinary examples of people coming out the other end of actually writing about it?
Well, yes, because what's fascinating about it is a lot of these things that we carry with us that feel like a big backpack, you know, that we're walking through life with because maybe something happened, maybe, you know, maybe you were sexually abused, maybe, it's whatever your turmoil is that we're walking through life with. For these women then to write the stories, what I have noticed, you know, they are able to put the backpack down. And especially with the 20 authors in the first Women on Fire book, we've talked extensively about what's happened for them. They've really moved on with their lives, and they're really joyful in, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just so glad I got that out. And of course they get feedback and they feel like they're really helping, which they are. They're really helping people when they share their story. So yes, I would say that's what's extraordinary. The people who write, the writers move on to the next thing. And some of them have written books, which is very exciting because, you know, they have a book in them. But starting out with a chapter is a nice way to be able to, you know, get your toe in the water of writing a bigger book.
I remember when we very, very first talked about this was about 4 years ago for the Columbus Metropolitan Club.
Oh, yeah.
And I moderated a panel discussion with you.
So good.
And I know Pat Wynn Brown. That was the first time I'd met Pat Wynn Brown. And she's certainly gone on to great things with the
Hair Theater.
And now getting ready to produce that new documentary of Monsieur Kimo. We talked about that a couple times. You're a seasoned journalist, though. You're a great writer yourself. Was there a point in time when you thought, well, I'll just write these stories for them? I mean, they can tell me the story because that's what you used to do.
Well, so interesting that you should say that. I had to make a conscious decision about that. And I originally was going to write their stories, but I then looked at it not only as a journalist, I went into my other career as a coach. And so I made the decision based on that career as a coach, because I knew if these women wrote the stories themselves, it would have an effect that would be very different from my writing about them. So I did make a conscious decision, and I'm very glad I did. We actually, our editor is in Columbus, Casey Cook, amazing author herself. And we pair Casey with our authors so that they feel that they have the support. There are many really excellent, what I was very pleased with. We had most of the co-authors were very excellent writers themselves. They, mm-hmm. Many of them didn't know that, but they were.
Mm-hmm. So there are always more stories. As soon as you get your feet back on the ground, Jill.
start book three.
Working on that. It did make me think of, again, Pat Wynn Brown, because in Monsieur Kimo, it is a series of monologues by people who, in one way or another, have crossed paths with cancer and what their experience has been. And it was, she could have maybe done that for them, but she let them do that. Mm-hmm. And it does have a different kind of an impact. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Debbie Phillips, founder of Women on Fire. We are going to meet a couple of the contributors to her new book. Meet with them. If you have a question or comment for Debbie, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the strength inside each of us as represented by a collection of real life stories edited by Women on Fire founder Debbie Phillips. The name of the book, Women on Fire, 21 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. Joining us now to talk about her story is Franklin County Commissioner Marilyn Brown. Welcome to the show, Marilyn.
Thank you, Ann. I'm happy to be here.
The story that you wrote is about your daughter, Darren, and how you have helped her, you and your husband, have helped her cope with the physical repercussions of a debilitating accident, how you survived helping her survive, It's sort of amazing how you start the story. I followed it on Facebook for a long time, but I did not know until I read your story about, exactly about how this it started. And you were actually on the phone with Darren in early 2010 when the nightmare began for her.
I was. And I, you know, we shared a lot of what went on with Darren throughout her hospitalization. I think it was beginning in 2011 or 12 is when we started writing on Facebook, which has been wonderful. And lots of people knew a lot of what went on with her, but nobody knew everything. And so I felt the need to really tell it all from my perspective, and starting with what originally happened. And what originally happened was the phone call, which was a daily phone call that I've had with Darren for years. She was a stage manager in New York City for 9 years. And this night was a night that my husband, Eric, and I were both campaigning for our offices. I was in my reelection, my first reelection as county commissioner. He was just asked for, he was just asked to consider running for Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which he was doing. He was currently probate court judge. And we were going to a local event, and I was on the phone with Darren, talking, chatting as she was walking to the subway. And we were on the phone. My older daughter was in her last couple of weeks before giving birth to our third and last grandson, I hope, Burl. and all of a sudden, Burl or Darren said to me, as we're chatting, she said, "Mom, I've been hit by a car," and it just didn't sink in. It absolutely didn't sink in. It was so not the conversation we were having. And then she said, "I've been hit," and then nothing. And all of a sudden, I heard in the background, this is in New York City, she said, or I heard people yelling and screaming in the background, "Oh my God, this girl's been hit. She's been hit. Call 911. She's been hit and she's down." And then nothing. And at the same time, I got a text from my older daughter that she thought she was in labor with our third grandson. And I didn't know what to do. And luckily, my husband knew where she'd be and texted her, Darren's boyfriend, who got to her quickly, got her to the emergency room quickly, and there starts the journey of what we went through and currently go through.
She already had a condition that was exacerbated by what was actually not a super serious act. Hit. It was serious because she was hit by a car, and that's always
serious.
It was serious.
But she was knocked down. She was taken to an emergency room in one of the hospitals in New York. We knew enough to call her chronic pain doctor, who talked to the hospital she was taken to. They knew very little about this condition, which is called RSD, or currently called chronic regional pain syndrome. The condition is pain and hypersensitivity of the nerves in her legs. So they took care of it short term. Bottom line was, eventually, she came back to live with us because she could not function in New York. Bottom line with our older daughter is she gave birth to our wonderful grandson, Alex, the next day. We were torn as to where we needed to be at that time. We didn't start posting anything on Facebook at that time. We thought this was short-term, whatever. It was very tough, very very fragile health condition at that point, but it was strictly a physical condition we knew would eventually go into remission, as it had all over the rest of her body, except it hasn't. And it's 3.5 years later, and it's still in her legs, has not gone into remission.
And that means
she's been hospitalized 9 times since she's been here. We've been with her the whole way. She was in life support several times for conditions that are maybe related to it. She broke her leg, required 3 surgeries. She had acute respiratory distress. We didn't know if that was connected or not. She was on life support. We didn't know what to do. That's when we first started posting on Facebook to let her friends know. She has friends all over the country who she's worked with as a stage manager. One of the most poignant things that occurred during the time she was on life support was that her theater chairperson at Ohio Northern, where she went and with whom she had continued this great relationship with after college, Nils Riis, came to visit her while she was on life support and stood at her bedside and just was devastated. He was her friend, her mentor, all the while she was a professional stage manager in New York, and he was absolutely devastated, and he would not have learned about her condition but for Facebook. The reason I wrote the chapter, though, was because nobody knew the full extent of what we had gone through with political lives, with work lives, with our other daughter and our third grandson, Alex, who is the joy of my life, as are the older 2 grandsons. Alex holds a special place in my heart because his life is so tied to Darren's life-changing situation, and I can't ever not look at him and see that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You're just hearing from Marilyn Brown, Franklin County Commissioner, is how you know her. Another way to know her is to read the chapter in a new book edited by Debbie Phillips, founder of Women on Fire. It's called Women on Fire, 21 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. The book is almost out. Debbie mentioned earlier, found a few glitches, got those fixed. So it's coming. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Debbie, did you ask Marilyn how did you find out about this, and did you ask Marilyn?
Well, Marilyn's part of Women on Fire, right? And she submitted the chapter, and of course, immediately when I read it, it was so compelling. It's also courageous. You know, having been in politics myself, it's very courageous for somebody who is in a public life to be able to speak what's going on with them behind the scenes, and she did that so beautifully in her proposal that it was immediately a no-brainer to include her, and I'm really thrilled. She speaks very personally in it, and I'm very proud for you.
How did it feel to write about it in that way?
It was difficult, but it changed. Darren has changed me. She's made me a better person. And she's made me better publicly. I've never really separated my public and private life, as you could see if you look at my Facebook work. But her condition has made me a better public servant. I am far more compassionate. I'm far more selective of what I do. And I think I do my work in a better way because of Darren. She's so positive. She's so hopeful. And she's made our whole family better.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have my older daughter as a public, looking to be a public servant as well. And because of Darren, I think that's been helpful too. Darren's older sister, Burl, is now running for, and I end the chapter saying we may have gotten a new public servant in the family. Well, she is currently running for school board in Gahanna, and we're so proud of her. And she looks at her sister and says, you know, if Darren can be so positive, and Darren can be, after what she's gone through, just now getting out of the hospital after 3.5 months in the hospital and in a rehab center, just getting home last week after the last time, Burl certainly has been a champion in working hard to get her position as a public servant in Gahanna, where she lives and her sons go to school, and they see their aunt as a real champ and very positive and upbeat. So I think it's made us all in our family very positive, very upbeat. And we look at Darren, who's still struggling with constant pain, being hopeful, being ready for the next try at medication that'll help, a therapy that'll help. She's trying to walk. She's doing physical therapy. She works harder than anybody else that she knows, trying to get to a place where she can get back to work.
You know, Debbie, so many of the stories are about things we thought the way the world was going to be, and then the way the world is, and what happens to us along the way. I mean, it seems like that's a recurring theme, is we have an expectation, and you thought you were going to have grandchildren's toys filling your condo,
and
it's medical equipment, and, you know,
medical equipment out the door.
Right.
And boxes of Darren's still from New York 3.5 years later. Our condo isn't designed for a third person living there. You know, it's just not. But we have commodes. We have 2 walkers. We have 3 wheelchairs. We've got all kinds of medical equipment in our tiny condo. Yeah.
But
who would have guessed?
Right. But, you know, to your point, Anne, that's what I think is so inspiring about all of these stories, is that there's a redemption in the end, or there's a positive way. So no matter what anybody's going through in life, they can find some happiness in someone else's struggle and give them a little bit of a guidepost.
If anybody out there has a question or comment for Marilyn Brown, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Marilyn's been talking about the topic of a chapter that she has contributed to a new book. It's the second Women on Fire, 21 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. What's the life secret, Marilyn, do you think, in this story that you tell about your life with Darren?
I can tell you what Darren says. She says there are choices. She could choose to be horribly negative and angry all the time, or she can choose to be positive. She chooses to be positive. I choose to be selective and positive, and I choose to not be the kind of person. I choose to be far more selective and compassionate, and I choose to really work on issues that are substantive and make a difference. I don't choose to do fluff stuff.
You could spread yourself
really
thin. I would imagine you're the kind of person who does spread themselves thin, but that's changed.
It's changed. I'm very much conserving my energy to work on the things that matter to me, rather than, you know, people are demanding of my attention all the time, and I am far more selective. You know, they don't have to meet with me. I could do a phone call. I could do nothing. I always return the calls, but
that's spreading yourself too thin.
Ugh.
I bet you hear that a lot at the Women on Fire tees, at the among women, among the people that you talk to. Not unusual to spread yourself too thin these days.
Not at all. What I do want to say about Marilyn that I've found so inspiring is she has made some choices, but I love when you make a choice, you go really deep. So tomorrow we're doing an event at Dress for Success, something that Marilyn is a big champion in. But I'm just so impressed, like, how deep you go with the things that you feel passionate about. So I know you have made some choices in all of this.
What's going on with Dress for Success?
I decided that if I'm going to do things, I'm going to do them in a very deep way. I'm not going to do a lot of things. But Dress for Success is an organization that I care passionately about. I do research on the things that I think I want to get involved in. And the women that get services from Dress for Success are women that I care about. They've been through challenges themselves. So Debbie and Mary Kay and I are going to go out to Dress for Success tomorrow afternoon and talk with them about our stories and the book, and we're going to give them copies of the book when it comes in, and help them see that their struggles have a meaning, and that they can choose how they will react, and that they can get over this negative stuff, and that they can be, because they are being helped with supportive services, they will get jobs, they will get services, they will get the clothes they need, they will get the support that they need from Dress for Success, and they will be successful in life. Success may need to be redefined, but they can find what they need, maybe in one of the stories, maybe in three of the stories, maybe they'll see themselves somewhere in the book. And that's what I plan to do with my copies of the book, is give them to people that I think need those books. So we plan to donate copies to the Columbus Metropolitan Library so that nobody is denied copies of the book.
We will return with our conversation talking about the topics in Women on Fire. 21 inspiring women share their life secrets and save you years of struggle with Debbie Phillips, co-founder of Women on Fire, also Marilyn Brown, Franklin County Commissioner. And coming up, another contributor to the book, Mary Kay Purdy. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the strength inside each of us as represented by a collection of real-life stories edited by Women on Fire founder Debbie Phillips. Also with us, Franklin County Commissioner Marilyn Brown. And joining us now is another contributor to Debbie's new book, Women on Fire, 21 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. Joining us now is another contributor, Mary Kay Purdy. Welcome to the show, Mary Kay.
Thank you, Ann. Happy to be here.
Your story starts in 1967. Your freshman year in college, what's supposed to be, well, for me, I mean, it was a wow year. You fell in what you thought was love.
It was.
And then what happened?
Well, I got pregnant. And believe it or not, didn't know I was pregnant. And, you know, it was a very difficult time, shameful, You know, what was I going to do? Who was I going to turn to? A little Catholic girl. It was very difficult.
And the first person you called was the guy?
The guy who wished me good luck. And I knew, I was crying, of course. I was in the doctor's office in the lobby, and I called him. And I knew I was on my own, and very frightened. Somehow, I went to Catholic Social Services, and they told me about St. Joseph Infant and Children's Home in Cincinnati. And, you know, I was very relieved that there was a solution. I knew there was no way I could have an abortion, personally. Mm-hmm. And I also knew I couldn't raise that child and that I couldn't ask my mother to raise that child.
And back in the day, you know, sometimes it's your story, sometimes difficult for young women today to imagine. You were, you know, the whole thing, you were very naive about sex and were surprised when someone suggested you might be pregnant. But
yes.
Also the, what do you mean you couldn't do it yourself? People are doing it themselves all the time now. What was wrong?
Well, we weren't raised to think we could be self-sufficient. You know, we were raised to think we would get married and have a family that way and to step out of that mold. I didn't have a job. I was a student at Ohio State. And my parents were older than most of my peers' parents. There was just no way I was going to be able to keep that baby. The next step, you know, for me would be to tell my parents. And I already knew where I was going. My mother was shocked and in tears and told me, you know, we'll get through this after many admonitions. Mm-hmm. But the next task would be to tell my father. And my father had a violent temper. And it's something we tiptoed around as a family. And when I told him, he came towards me and collapsed on the floor. I literally thought, oh, great. I've killed my father.
You know, you made an interesting observation at that point in the story. Your father collapsed at your feet, but just a few weeks before that, they had been celebrating the coming birth
yes.
of your sister's first child.
Yes, 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 yes. That was a very joyous moment. And, you know, that complicated things for me, although, you know, I loved that little girl, too, when she was born. Still do, as a matter of fact. But, you know, my situation was shameful. I was the bad girl. I did something I wasn't supposed to do and got caught. That was the biggie. Mm-hmm. I got caught in a big way. And, you know, I mean, my mother and sister brought the baby to the unwed mother's home. There I was
while
pregnant.
You were waiting, yeah.
Yes, while I was waiting the birth of my child, who was born a month actually 6 weeks later. And I was so happy about that little baby. You know, we got to nurture babies that were considered unadoptable while I was in the unwed mother's home. And so there was that grace of being with those little children. It was wonderful.
You said your life at St. Joe's was a blur. And I wondered, how long were you actually there? And you know, why was it a blur, do you think?
Well, I was there 3 months, and we went by first names only. Some girls used fake names. That's how secretive everything was. I'd never been away from home before. Here I am, you know, 18 and pregnant at a strange place with a bunch of other young girls who were also pregnant. It's a very otherworldly situation to be in. And in fact, when I think back to those days, and I remember two of the nuns were so wonderful to us, so friendly, so non-judgmental, but I can't remember their names. And I can't remember the names of the girls who were there with me. You know, it's an amazing thing that, you know, I remember certain incidences, I remember taking care of the children. They had medical disabilities. And I remember walking a little boy who was a hydrocephalic and had an extremely large head. And I would put him in a wagon on pillows and take him outside and walk him just to get him out. And I remember, you know, waking up in the hospital. And I remember my father picking me up. And I mean, there's just certain things. But I mean, kind of the day-to-day life, I remember I kept my room really clean. You know, it was like I don't know that I was that way at home. But, you know,
Well, you grew up.
Yes, I did.
An interesting
really
contrast, too, with the children who were considered unadoptable at the time. That is an interesting juxtaposition with these girls who aren't fit for society at the time.
Right.
Sort of along the same lines,
absolutely,
but for different reasons.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, a big event at the home was when another girl delivered. And if you were good friends with that girl, you got to go to the hospital with her. And it was frightening to be in a car because you hadn't been in a car, you know. And then on this hairy drive with these nuns, you know, it was just really bizarre. And, you know, I had a very touching moment happen on one of those visits, too, when a woman delivered a baby and was wheeled out. And there I am standing around with three other pregnant girls, you know, and the husband was there. And the doctor patted him on the hand and said, "This baby has 10 fingers and 10 toes. She's just perfect." And it just was like, oh, my God, you know, that's the way this is supposed to turn out. You know?
And also, this is really happening.
And this is really happening. Yes, absolutely.
I'm talking with Mary Kay Purdy. She is one of the contributors to a new Women on Fire book. It's called Women on Fire, 21 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. Also with me, Debbie Phillips, a founder of Women on Fire, who edited the book. Mary Kay Purdy, how did you decide? Did you submit your story? How did that work? How did you get yours in?
Well, actually, Debbie Phillips called me.
Yeah, can I say something about that? I had known Mary Kay for maybe 20 years. We worked together in state government in Ohio. And I did not know her story in the beginning. And then I knew little pieces of her story over a 20-year period. And so Mary Kay is an example of someone whose story was so powerful. I wanted her in the book, and she had not, I don't think you'd thought about ever telling your story. It's so beautiful, so powerful. Mary Kay knows a lot about all of this. And when Mary Kay said to me, "Debbie, 1 million women in the 50s and 60s went, you know, gave up their babies for adoption and were in unwed mother's homes," I knew then. I said, "Oh my God!" Because I was a former journalist. You know, I pay attention to these things. I had no idea.
We knew about them.
We knew about them, but we didn't know about them.
And for good reason. People didn't even know each other's last names.
Absolutely.
There was a hard. It's not like you have a reunion every year or anything like that. Now, there's a part two to your story.
Yes, there certainly is.
Tell us about that.
Well, I made the effort to try to locate my daughter when she would have been 30 years old. I actually thought about doing it earlier, but I felt it would be too disruptive to her life. But at 30, I thought, you know, I still need to know that I made the right decision. And that was the driving force. And I started contacting organizations. Reunite was the name of the organization that eventually helped me very quickly find out the name of my daughter. And I then used the internet and found her family name. It was ethnic, up in the Cleveland area. And made that phone call and connected with her. Actually, I have to back up. I wrote her a letter first. Because I felt that was the kind of safer way to approach it, and I would get to say what I needed to say, and I didn't want to frighten her. I didn't know exactly how to go in and go about it. I just wanted her to know that I wasn't coming for anything. I just needed to know that I'd made the right decision when I gave her up for adoption. And when we did connect, she was startled, needless to say. She did know she was adopted.
Did she know the circumstances?
No. Catholic Social Services is very hush-hush about all of that, mm-hmm. you know. In fact, when I contacted them to begin this process to find her, what they sent me was what they call non-identifying information. She was blonde. You know, she had blue eyes. She went to a family that had also adopted a son and, you know, loving family. And it was, you know, and that was like, gold to me, you know, just to know that. Eventually, after about 6 months, she and I decided to meet. And I drove up to Cleveland and we met at a small little restaurant near her home. And it was the most unbelievable experience for me to look at her. I get verklempt just thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Because we looked alike, and same smile, same eyes, same dimples, you know. And it was, by that time, she was excited to meet me as well. And so we were like, you know, what size is your shoe? You know,
and
do you have moles on your back? You know, I mean, you know, it was just a most amazing event.
It's really personal. And you wrote a chapter about it.
Yes.
And did people know about this, or are a lot of people going to learn something new about you?
Well, I think what people will learn that's new is about my experience at the home.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who knows me knows that I have reconnected with this wonderful daughter of mine, whose birthday is this week. She's going to be 45.
Oh, she's still a spring chicken.
Yes,
yes, she is.
Yes. And she has three beautiful children. So they know that. They know that about me. What they didn't know was the experience at the home. And it was at Debbie's encouragement that I wrote the article, or the chapter, because when I think back about it, no one ever asked me, where you been? How you feeling? How you doing? It was like it didn't happen.
Right. So we know? A million women went through this.
And that's really an important point, because this story touches so many women, even if it wasn't that they went to an unwed mother's home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they kept their baby. And in fact, a mutual friend of ours came up to me recently and said, I got to keep mine. I mean, it's an amazing thing how many women are touched by this story in some way or another. And I also would just like to mention Ann Fessler, who did a documentary called A Girl Like Her. And I attended that documentary at the Wexner Center late last year. And actually was with a woman who was in the home with me. And she contacted me on Facebook and said, I know you probably don't remember me, but we were together 44 years ago. Blah, blah, blah. And anyhow, she and I, when I got these tickets to go see Ann Fessler's documentary, I called Kim and I said, do you want to join me? And she did. And, you know, I looked at her and I didn't know her face at all. That's what I mean about it being
right.
a blur.
Right.
But listen to this. She never told anybody all these years. And her son had just recently found her. And she was so thrilled about that. But she didn't tell her parents. Her parents thought she had taken a job in Toledo.
Wow.
Her children didn't know. Her husband didn't know. No one knew. Because, you know, that's kind of how it was pounded into your head. I mean, you know, it didn't happen. It just didn't happen.
Well, Thank you so much for sharing your story today. I loved reading both of the stories, Marilyn Brown, you as well. Thank you so much. It's nice to know what's behind the Facebook posts now, know the whole story. Thank you very much. Mary Kay Purdy, you as well. Thank you so much. Debbie Phillips, it's always great to see you. Thanks a lot for joining us again.
It's a joy to be here. Thank you, Anne.
Debbie Phillips, she's founder of Women on Fire, the new book, the second edition or the second, however you call it.
Second volume,
that's it. Women on Fire, 21 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. Thanks a lot for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.